Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 7. I'm Rob Wright, site editor at CertSecurity.com, and I'm here as usual with my fellow site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Peter, I'm just going to warn you, you might want to get your radiation suit. Just put it on right now because I'm about to go nuclear.
It's already on.
Yeah. I'm going to probably quickly morph into my alter ego, Johnny Meltdown, based almost entirely on our headline item of this week, which is astounding to me. Because once again, Peter, we have Symantec in the news for all the wrong reasons. We've been talking about Symantec a lot on this podcast. Initially, it was bad. More recently, it was, I guess, good. You could say it was good news, the acquisition of Blue Coat and management changes and trying to do something to shake the company up. But Peter, bad news this week. And in the words of the security researcher who discovered both this set of critical vulnerabilities and the last batch of critical vulnerabilities for Symantec products, what did he say? This is as bad as it gets.
That's right.
Yeah. So, okay, go ahead.
But first, I know it seems like it's two separate things, but my guess is that it's not, that it's just a whole bunch of bad things that were all found in the same work project, and we're getting them in dribs and drabs because we only hear about them as Symantec fixes them, because otherwise they're under a 90-day a limit on when they can be made public.
Disclosure,
exactly. So that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and I think there's something to your logic and your theory that we should revisit. But let's describe the issue in depth. Because it's really baffling, and you wrote the story about it. But just to, I'll give a quick overview, and then you can kind of fill in some of the details. Essentially, we have another report from Google Project Zero, their researcher Tavis Ormandy, who discovered that Symantec products. There were several critical vulnerabilities in Symantec's product line because they were using outdated, unpatched, third-party open source software. Recklessly, I would say. You know, he didn't say that, but I mean, he kind of suggested it. And it's this coming on the heels of finding out, you know, from the earlier Google Project Zero report from about a month ago, where Ormandy explained that in a report about a series of different flaws, that Symantec's antivirus program was scanning malicious code, bringing it into the kernel, Windows kernel, that the engine, whoever designed it, saw fit to do such a thing. Was I mean, that was already shocking, and that was already mind blowing to me. This, I don't know, I'm not sure if we're we can argue what's worse. We probably will in a little bit. But this, to me, is almost equally astounding, if not more, especially coming on the heels of what we saw back in May. So, Peter, what's your take on this? Give us a little bit of detail on the issue. It's bad.
Well, okay. So Ormandy wrote that it's as bad as it gets, but that's also what he wrote last month, that, or actually back in May,
mm-hmm.
that it is as bad as it gets. It's really not good practice to unload potentially malicious software in your kernel. There are the new thing this time around is that we've found out that Symantec was using open source software that hadn't been patched in about 4.5 years, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, we can't be certain about these things, and I certainly don't want to accuse Symantec of doing things recklessly without regard for whatever, because I don't know. I don't know why they did it this way. Who knows? It's a difficult business, and profit margins are what they are, and you don't want to spend a lot of money on doing massive monitoring and vulnerability scanning for things that you assume are correct, but maybe that's what we have to do. The bad part is that, yeah, not only is the average person who, or average enterprise that's running a piece of third-party software that may or may not have open source code that's hasn't been updated, it's not just the average enterprise or business or small business or individual. It is Symantec, the company that we're expecting to be the leader in security in antivirus technology. So, yeah, I guess it would really be good if we could get answers on this, but it's happening. And I can go on and on about this, but I'll let you go on.
I feel like you're stealing a little bit of my thunder, because although doing it in a very measured and logical and restrained way, and I thank you for that, because I don't think we can both be crazy. But
why not?
Well, I guess we could. You expect a certain level of quality from market leaders. You expect a certain type of not just product quality, but like leadership quality and design quality and strategy quality. Now, whoever thought it was a good idea to use this open source software in these products and then leave it unchecked, I don't know how they were able to make that decision. I don't know how this decision was able to go unnoticed. I don't know how they didn't have people like Ormandy at Project Zero on their own staff, Symantec's own staff, looking at this stuff. It's really baffling. And when you think about companies out there, look, we can sit here all day and talk about the number of software companies that have made boneheaded decisions and left pretty egregious vulnerabilities and flaws and used terrible design choices in their products that have put clients at risk, users at risk, just bad stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit here and say and compare those companies that make your business applications or your, you know, your general purpose computing applications, your accounting software for, you know, your taxes at home and things like that. Like, that's one thing. When you're a company that is one of the market leaders in security and you can't do sort of basic bug checking, basic development, basic quality control that prevents this sort of thing from happening, then what does that say not only about your company, what does that say about the industry? I mean, to have a company that is literally synonymous with security software and antivirus do something like this, like we've already talked about, this is coming on the heels of another just really mind-blowing, inexplicable decision, design-wise, by having, you know, the scanning engine unpack malicious code in the Windows kernel, which, you know, I don't want to go nuclear on that again. You can listen to episode one of the Cert Security Risk and Repeat podcast to get the full explosion. But to have this, it's just, I'm Peter, I feel like I'm speechless. I don't know, you know, I haven't been this upset since, Goose died in Top Gun, you know? I mean...
Wait, spoiler.
Yeah, Goose, yeah. Goose hit the canopy, and I'm like, no, I mean, truthfully, I haven't been this upset since a couple weeks ago when we discussed semantic the vulnerabilities the first time around. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't understand. And I just want to read a couple bits here from the reports, the bug report and the blog post Ormandy wrote on this latest batch. He writes, "These vulnerabilities are as bad as it gets." I think this is the third time we've mentioned that, but it's worth repeating.
Sure.
"These vulnerabilities are as bad as it gets. They don't require any user interaction. They affect the default configuration and the software runs at the highest privilege levels possible. In certain cases on Windows, vulnerable code is even loaded into the kernel." Again, this is me talking now. Again, revisiting the first batch of vulnerabilities, resulting in remote kernel memory corruption. So this, you're right, this is kind of tied to what he divulged earlier in that first round of flaws and that initial report back in May. He goes on, "In my opinion, I'm being extremely generous considering this issue is a new vulnerability and not public information. Frankly, it is astonishing that Symantec does not track new releases of third-party code they use. I think you should take this opportunity to check all other third-party code you're using to verify that you haven't fallen behind," end quote. So, it's important to note in the bug report, I think he says that the Symantec antivirus scanning engine, what's known as the Decomposer, he believes it uses rare or RAR code. And he says, "By comparing Symantec's code to this open source code, I've determined that Symantec is probably using version 4.14 of the unrare code released in January of 2012. The most current version is 5.3.11. So that's pretty incredible. And I'm generally pretty speechless about the particulars of what has gone on here. But let's go back to your theory. Do you think more is coming? And that's going to dovetail into our next point of this discussion. But do you think that this is that Project Zero, that Ormandy, they've been doing a deep dive on these products. Do you think that they've got more coming and that we have not seen the worst of this yet? I mean, I can't even saying that out loud, I can't even fathom this.
Okay, so here's my theory. If you go and you look at the bug tracking site,
yes,
bugs.chromium.org,
yes,
you will be able to see. You can search on all issues, and you'll see that there are, I believe, 714 issues numbered from 852. So some of those issues are hidden because of disclosure. You don't want to disclose bugs that have not been fixed and there's 0 days and so on. But looking at there were seven of these tickets that were resolved in this last batch that we just read about. And prior to that, I want to say that there weren't quite seven, but to be honest, I don't have that figure right here. But
sure.
The
sure.
fact is that they were numbered from, this batch was numbered from, I think, starting at 8:07, if I'm not mistaken. Nope, not 8:07. I think it started at 8:10. Right. So it goes 8:10, 8:14, and so on. 8:17 was a McAfee bug. 8:20 is a Symantec bug that's showing up as fixed as well. But along with that, it tells you when the issue is reported initially into the system, I think. And so, for example, issue 8:20 was reported into the system April 28th, 2016. Some of these, the bulk of the ones that came out this past week seemed to be reported into the system late April, early May, first few days of May, last few days of April. but we haven't gotten, we don't have a sequentially complete series yet. So there are gaps. There's 8.11, 8.12, 8.13, 8.15, 8.22, 8.24 through 8.35. None of those have been posted publicly yet. So are some of those going to be some more semantic bugs?
I think it's a pretty good bet.
My gut tells me, yeah. I mean, my gut tells me a lot of things, but this time I'm going to go with it and suggest that in the next week to a month, we're going to hear more about Symantec antivirus vulnerabilities that may or may not be as bad as it gets. I hope not, but that's a lot of possibilities there. And it's a little scary, but at the same time, you know, this is how the business goes. We, you know, the good guys make a tool and the bad guys try to break it. Then the good guys try to fix it and the bad guys try to break it again. It's a literally endless arms race.
But Peter, this isn't the bad guys breaking the product. This is the good guys kind of not breaking. Well, I mean, I guess you could argue whether it's whether these products are truly broken or not. But the point is that it's hard enough to deal with the bad guys trying to break your products when you go out of your way to not fix the problems that are inherent in your own products, and you make decisions that hurt your products, hurt your technology, then how do we have any hope of really winning this war? Look, man, I'm just trying to get out of this podcast studio and not have like meltdowns, right? You know, I don't want to, like, I like doing the podcast with you, but I don't need to be in here all the time having meltdowns and going full angst and, you know, pulling my hair out, watching it turn white. When it comes to this stuff, going through what I call cybersecurity stress syndrome. But, you know, when things like this happen, you gotta take a step back and say, what are we even doing here? I mean, what is Symantec? I mean, it's no wonder that they felt like they had to do a big acquisition and then bring in new leadership, because when something like this happens, and I hope this is addressed under the new CEO and the new direction, when something like this happens, I mean, there had to have been more than just a handful of people on Symantec's development team, on their staff, that knew that this sort of thing was happening. Maybe not the specific flaws, but knew that they were using some open source software, knew that it hadn't been updated or hadn't been checked, or no one was really watching the store. And if they didn't know, they should have had some type of continuity system where the person who made those choices and the people that knew about those choices pass that knowledge on to the next people. I know there's been a lot of turnover at software companies. I know there's been a lot of turnover at Symantec. But let's be real here. I mean, you cannot do this thing. I'm not even a software developer. I know that you cannot do this. You cannot do this.
Well, it looks like they did, but so I guess they can do it. It's just not right.
Oh, but, the meltdown.
Okay. Oh. Come down from the
chandelier. Yeah, all right. Sometimes the abyss gazes back, Peter. Sometimes it gazes back.
But the thing, you know, organizations are weird things. And
I know.
You know, the person who decided to use that piece of open source software for that library might have been a low-level, a grunt programmer.
That's a great point.
And that person might have been one of the people that lost their jobs last year when Symantec let go of the... blame some of their staff for the bad certificate that got caught by Google.
It's entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Again, pure conjecture, but the fact is that
it's good conjecture.
These things happen. People change jobs. People change responsibilities. People move beyond. People leave. Sometimes people don't document everything they did. I think, you know, the more I think about this whole situation, it reminds me that software quote unquote engineering isn't really on the same professional level as, say, chemical or civil engineering, where you've got to pass a test and be licensed. With software, you can call yourself a software engineer or even a network engineer. I was termed a network engineer back in the day,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't have any engineering training or software development training or formal network training. But I was a network engineer because I was doing the work of a network engineer. We're in early days in networking and computing in general. So as this kind of thing happens, it's like the big disasters of civil engineering that led to the formal certification of civil engineers, that we have to have some bridges collapse and buildings fall down and just generally the software equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to have to start certifying or at least formalizing the process of engineering software so that it's safe.
Well, let me ask you, that is a fantastic point. Let me ask you, do you consider this the equivalent of a bridge falling on our collective freaking heads? Because I obviously, you know how I feel. I'm over here, I'm Chernobyl over here. And you're bringing it calmly, coolly as you usually do, and thank God for that. And I'm Johnny Meltdown over here. So, but do you think that this is how the industry is going to react to this? Because I to me, this is the equivalent of when the industry's biggest antivirus vendor has these sorts of things happen to it, when it's revealed that this kind of stuff is going on within their products, unchecked, unresolved. I do feel like that this is kind of a wake up call. And maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe I am holding Symantec to a higher standard. But when you're making your company the top of that market, you're making billions of dollars on the strength of your antivirus products and your security software, and this type of thing is going on within the products. I mean, that to me, that is mind blowing. That's as clear a call for the type of quality assurance and control and professionalism that we need for this stuff as you described. But I gotta be honest, I don't think we're gonna get there. I mean, I felt like in the news cycle, this has got the same amount of sort of here we go again, another antivirus product screw up. Here we go again, Symantec. Almost like we've been desensitized to it. Well, and that's crazy to me.
Consider the car.
Yes.
The
automobile.
The automobile.
Not my car.
Not any particular car.
But not my Mini.
Consider the our car automobile-based culture where yes. we drive around everywhere.
Sure.
At some point, the annual fatalities for automobile accidents went up to, I'm going to say, somewhere in the 30 to 50,000 a year range.
Mm-hmm.
And that occurred some generations ago.
Yes.
Oh, when there were, say, 100 million Americans rather than 300 plus million Americans.
Sure.
The automobile fatality rate these days is around 30,000 a year. So clearly we've gotten the cost of driving, the cost in lives of driving, down somewhat, considerably actually, because if we're getting the same number with three times as many people,
right?
So we've cut that by two thirds, let's say, but it's taken a long time. It's required improved infrastructure. It's required things like research into traffic lights and traffic signals. It's included airbags, seat belts, anti-lock brakes, you name it. All of the features, many of the features, the new features that we get in new cars are safety features.
Yes.
And that's good. We still see 30,000 people a year getting killed in their cars and hundreds of thousands getting injured in car accidents.
True.
Every year. We're gonna keep seeing these fatal and serious injuries equivalent in the computer as long as we don't put our attention on fixing it. So mm-hmm. that's why Microsoft is spending a lot of time improving security in Windows 10, and Apple is doing what they're doing, and Google is doing a very important part of the job with the Project Zero. And as we go on, and as more people get hit by a truck in their car or the cyber truck of a ransomware attack.
Yes.
So as more
we got people, hit by a truck, all right.
Yeah, as more people get the personal experience of their grandmother, or their niece, yep. or their themselves having to deal with this kind of an attack, there's going to be more and more outrage, and there's going to be more and more going beyond the call to Congress to say protect us, and Congress is going to throw their hands up because they don't know what to do either. And finally, at long last, somebody will probably say, we need to start holding software companies accountable. We need to start making a moonshot of computer safety the same way as over the last 50 or 60 years we've made a cultural choice to try to make driving safer.
Yep.
So safer computing, I hope it'll happen in my lifetime.
And on that point, I think it's worth noting a little bit more from Ormandy's own words from the Google Project Zero report. You know, he talks about vulnerability management as sort of being a basic tenet of this stuff for software developers. You know, and I want to read this excerpt because I think it goes to your point. He writes, the Google Project Zero report states, as with all software developers, antivirus vendors have to do vulnerability management. This means monitoring for new releases of third-party software used, watching published vulnerability announcements, and distributing updates. Nobody enjoys doing this, but it's an integral part of secure product development. Semantic dropped the ball here. And he goes on to say that the Decomposer engine used code derived from open source libraries that hadn't been, hadn't updated them in at least 7 years. So it wasn't just the one that involved the flaw, there was others. And I almost think this is like too technical and too, because this wasn't exploited, because it was caught, because Symantec, you know, to their credit, as Ormandy points out, they did resolve it, and they got on it apparently relatively quickly to resolve it. But Peter, do you think, and I mentioned this in the office the other day as I was going DEF CON Zero talking about this issue, because I could not believe what you were telling me. You actually, and this might be interesting to the listeners, it may not, but you actually withheld, you knew I was working on something else at the time, you actually withheld knowledge of the specifics of this report as you were writing it because you did not want me to go too crazy.
And what's your question?
That's not my question, it was a statement. And you made the right choice. That was a great life choice to not. You knew I was neck deep in work, and you said, "You said, did you see this?" And you said, "You know what? Don't. I'm not gonna tell you right now. I'm gonna wait because I don't think it, you know. Hey, we can't deal with the nuclear fallout right now. You're too busy. But serious question. Do you think if you were a betting man and you've made a wager already, if you were a betting man? I know this. They haven't seen exploits of this in the wild yet, but that doesn't mean there hasn't been any. Do you honestly think that no sophisticated APT group, no nation-state hacker, no enemy government has discovered this, which is apparently not that hard to discover, and used it to their advantage and exploited it on a small scale for targeted hacks against high value targets against large, you know, big fish. If you're a betting man.
I am a betting man.
Yes.
But I try to place bets where I think I can win.
Okay.
Or where at least where the odds are in my favor.
Okay. Yes.
And on this one, it's hard to say. I will say that now that they have been disclosed,
mm-hmm.
and one of the other egregious things that we didn't really touch on, and we don't have to, but is that some of these, am I right in saying, yes, some of these vulnerabilities are not automatically fixed.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you got it. Oh, that was a great point. Yeah. And it's, some are fixed by live updates, some of the consumer level products, but others, yeah, you got to get your people to go in there and start tinkering with the software to make sure it,
well, not fiddling, but they have to go in and apply the patches.
Apply the patches manually.
Right. Right. Now, given that, I will bet that we'll see people getting exploited with this vulnerability who haven't done the patches yet. And they may be holding off on the patches because they're in production, major production systems, and they're waiting for the last round of these things to come out. Or they may just be companies that the guy who they hired to do this changed his focus, or he left, or they let him go, or her go. And so yeah, we'll probably see people taking advantage of this in the aftermath. But as far as have these vulnerabilities been exploited, I think it's possible. I certainly think it's possible. Depends on what odds
you. But maybe not probable.
I'm not going to even go that far. I don't know enough.
But that's the thing. I mean, what you're describing, that people are, because it's going to require a manual patch, that people are going to fall victim to this because they don't patch it, that's worse. So, and I mean, we can sit here for another hour or whatever and talk about who's ultimately responsible if that happens. And you know what, Peter? That can be our next podcast, because I believe you. I think you're right. I think there's more coming. I think we have not seen the end of this series of vulnerabilities and issues with semantic products. I hope I'm wrong. I don't like to see the company get raked over the coals like this. I don't like to see one of the market leaders in this space, in our industry, get slammed with these types of reports and findings. But this is the truth, and we're in a bad situation here. And I'm hoping that you're wrong, but I think you're right. And man, we're going to be back here soon, aren't we?
Yeah, next week. But the thing to remember is that it's better. You know, some people say no news is good news. Yeah. But if you,
not me. We're in the news business.
Well, that's true too. Okay. So it's not us.
It's not us.
But the fact is, I'm glad to hear that we are finding more and more bugs and more products, because it means that things are getting better.
Okay. You know what? That is the perfect positive. I'm glad you're here. Like I've been saying, you bring positive light to my dour meltdowns. Peter, that is a great point, and it's the perfect note to end on as we go into a long holiday weekend. And happy 4th of July, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Risk and Repeat podcast. I am Rob Wright.
And I'm Peter Lotion.
And we will see you next time.